I'm like the Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. If you put a mic in front of me now, it's gotta happen. Oh, believe it or not, I'm talking about toys.
Why are we talking about toys?
Yeah, we're just talking about toys. Let's just start. I just want to start. Let's just start. All right, fine. I'm good. We don't really even need any. There's no pretense necessary. We're just talking. No. Just talking about toys, man.
Just talking about toys.
Talking it up. All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Hey Kids Comics. This is issue 158. Cole is with me as usual.
Here, I'm here.
This American toy. I'm not going to do the whole Iron Glass thing.
Probably best not to.
What?
You know what happens when we get all PBS-y?
I know. It's been a while. It's been a while. We might have to have a late arrival.
There was a toy store.
Oh God.
Sorry, 10 guys. Miles south Sorry, of guys. Lake Wobegon, my hometown.
This is Hey Kids Comics, by the way. Is it still happening, or did it stop for now?
It's still happening.
Oh, yeah. can somebody show Garrison Keillor what chloroform smells like? Because no. Okay, no, yes, it should
it's
be Garrison.
To tell that I'm not younger because I'm so reserved that you would
never know.
Can't tell.
Constantly high. Garrison Keillor was constantly high, just stoned out of his
gourd. We burned a lot of hemp in Lake Wobegon, my hometown, at the annual hemp-burning festival.
Hemp-burning festival. Oh, my God.
But we're not here to talk about hemp. We're here to talk about plastic.
Maybe you're not here to talk about hemp. Yes, we are. You have found us in the middle of
We are dead center. We are on the fulcrum upon which all of this balances.
Usually most punchy show in a story arc.
So very true. And we're already off to a bit of a punchy start, but I think it's largely because of Hemp Burning Day.
Is that a day?
It is a day.
Believe it or not, I'm burning some hemp.
I believe it.
Shut up. Shut up, Cole. What is the title of this thing that we're doing?
We are in the dead center. We are in the middle of Toylandia.
Nice.
Which is our tribute, our exploration, our show of love and devotion to the toys that we love that are comic book themed.
A little deeper look into it, something that we haven't done. We usually do like an issue every quarter about just toys that we like or toys that are coming out or toys that we want, which, by the way, we are doing. That is coming. But this was our chance to really get a little deeper into some of the errata of toys. Not that this one is going to be that, because when you get Cole and I started on Justice League and Avengers toys, Marvel and DC toys, it's all over, but... But
indeed,
still.
And we're going to be talking a lot about this. This is, of course, the third chapter of this arc, which is JLA Avengers and Company. And really, you can't get a more active genre, a more active species of action figures and toys based on comics than those based on the Marvel and DC properties. I mean, after all, they are the big two.
Right. And the cool thing about that is that there's no I can the earliest toy outside of Star Wars that I can really remember collecting, like going out of my way to collect, were the Marvel Secret Wars toys with the lenticular shield holograms.
Oh yes.
And then an oddly spelt Dr. Octopus, which has never been the case, I don't think, ever in the career of Dr. Octavius, was that he looked like he was really
been hitting the Stairmaster there or something. He was having some rocking those abs there.
Maybe get out and run a 5K. I don't think he's ever done that. But yeah, so I think for all of us toy collectors out there, especially us older toy collectors. You know, we've been through the epoch of toys. You know, we've seen the Noah's Ark flood. We've seen the droughts. We've seen the Ice Age and the Thoracic period. You know, we've seen it.
The Thoracic.
It's in the middle. It's in the middle.
It's sort of a middle period.
It's in the middle, right between the ass and the face of toy collecting. It's right in the middle. where the thorax would. That's the joke that I'm making out of my mispronunciation. But we've seen it all. And I think that for the most part, we've really seen it with Marvel and DC, because they're the, you know, what was the movie? It wasn't Yojimbo. What was the playing both sides against the middle Kurosawa movie? Because that's what it always has been. It's always been them on either side of the street, not even just with comics, but with toys. You know, going for one-upsmanship. And it's been awesome for us, because there's so much weird shit out there that we could collect that I never in a million years would have thought. Because if you go back and listen, there are some old episodes of Amazing Comicast and Collector Sector that we've all done, Rick Gutierrez and sometimes Stu Balk and Cole and I, where we talk about toys that we would want to see. We're like, these are the toys we would love to see. And shit you not, within a couple of years, the Helicarrier was one of them. Do you remember us saying we wanted a Helicarrier for the Marvel 3¾-inch figures? And a year later, it's released at San Diego. Yeah.
And not only did they do the Helicarrier, they did an even bigger Helicarrier for San Diego Comic Con to piss people off, because it had, like, the bigger Helicarrier plus, what's her name?
Maria Hill was in there.
Hill.
So yeah, this is the way it works. We live in this, the 3D printing always on, ear to the ground world.
Oh, yeah, we are in a golden era.
Yes! Yes!
This truly is the golden age of collecting, of collectibles in general.
Cole seems so mad at me for saying that, but I think he's come around.
Yeah, but ages ago I said, it's probably been over a decade ago now, that we were standing on the brink, anything pop culture that you ever loved,
the precipice,
would be a collectible in the future. And we are just, you know, as soon as the Funko Pop hee-haw pop vinyls come out, that will be you know, the cap, or that will be the final proof of concept.
I'm telling you. Okay, so you give me Golden Girls, you give me Hee Haw, you give me Laugh-In, and I'm done. I will quit collecting toys altogether. I will hermitize myself. I will write a manifesto in the woods about toys. That's what I'm done.
That's right. So, you know, it's benefited things like the superhero genre, the superhero, the comic book character action figure. This is their age, because it has become increasingly simple and cost effective, to the point where, you know, Ahab gets an action figure. I'm not talking about the Captain from Moby Dick or the I'm talking about, I'm not sure what.
New Mutants villain.
Yeah, from some X-Men genre.
Well, was it? God, it was part of a giant crossover, and I can't remember what the crossover was, but he was the... G.W. Bridge.
And Trevor Fitzroy.
Because there's nothing more exciting than playing with a Trevor Fitzroy action figure.
Who bought a Trevor Fitzroy figure, huh?
I actually think I had one.
Anybody?
I think I had one. As sad as that might be.
I actually got the free, like, buy 4 or 5 Marvel figures, and you got a free Mojo at Toy Fair.
Free Mojo! They couldn't give away that.
Yeah, the thing was, it was one of the best figures in the line. The thing came with, like, all these little legs you plugged in on his little Mojo chair with its
Mojo
scorpion tail. and everything. I mean, it was just, it was really kind of one of the cool ones, and it actually stood up on its little spindly legs.
So where did this start for you? Like, so we got Marvel.
You know,
yeah, I want to hear.
We talked about with the Migos that, and you notice how I combined Mego and Migo.
You did Mexico.
Mexico, down Mexico way. You know, the earliest super figure I had, of course, was my Mego Aquaman.
Mm-hmm.
And then it kind of expands out of that, because I really don't recall. I mean, growing up, it was kind of a mixed bag, because I was really into dinosaurs, but we had some G.I. Joes, and my mom would, like, take old sheets so we could have hammocks and parachutes.
Right.
And their claw, you know, bedrolls, if you will. but the superhero really came of its own for me during the years when, you know, we were waxing and waning and beginning to see the end of the Star Wars lines. And my friend Steve, who's been on the show, had really gotten into this new line from Kenner called Superpower.
Oh, yeah.
And I was really impressed by this line, because, you know, we talked about the mechanisms and stuff and the Superman punching action and all, but what was really cool about it is the level of detail. One of the things that impressed the socks off me was when we got the Flash figure out of the package and noticed that they cut the grooves into the soles of his boots. He was the only one with any kind of sole detailing.
Yes.
At all. And it was, there were little subtle things like that were patently unnecessary, but amazingly cool. And I thought, okay, yeah, that's kind of neat and all. And then I stumbled on the Brainiac figure, which he was having a hard time finding. And it was that Gil Kane designed skull robot Brainiac.
Right.
And that figure looked incredibly cool. So much so that I didn't really care that much about the character, but the figure looked amazing. And I went back to buy one and then settled instead on Martian Manhunter.
Okay.
Because it was, again, so really, I love the fact that they got this little beetling brow there so well realized. And just the simplicity of his suspender shorts.
Okay. You know, can we talk? Can we just talk for a second about the bandolero short situation that, for some reason,
it's rare. I think occasionally it occurs in women's magazines.
Yeah.
But I've never seen the suspender boxers, or in his case, briefs, in the Fruit of the Loom, Hanes. Nobody seems to have.
You can't get
Under
him.
Under Armour has one. But
Under Armour. Well, but yeah, you know, because he's a shapeshifter, so one would think that he could just, if he was having a problem keeping his shorts up,
yeah,
you just inflate certain, I'm not being gross, but, like, you know, if it's your waist, inflate your waist a little bit. Keep your shorts up, man. You don't need a you know, weird bandolier suspender short situation, like trunks and, like, I don't, it always struck me as odd. I'm just going to say that. It was a little weird.
Yeah.
And the other thing about that Brainiac figure that was so rad was that it was chrome.
Back then, everything was pretty rad.
Yeah, everything in this, everything you saw was rad, but it was chrome. If you remember right, it was like straight up chrome.
Not only was it chrome, it was a blue chrome.
Yeah, it was cool. It was real cool.
Prior to that, I don't think existed in nature.
It just still didn't.
Yeah, but or in toys for that matter.
Right. No, this is the Superpower series, and this is what I was talking about with a little bit of the one-upsmanship, was that both Marvel and DC were clamoring for an entree outside of, you know, the Mego situation into the toy market. And I think that this was both of their, and I'm struggling to remember which one came first, but I want to say that Secret Wars came first.
Yeah, the thing is, it almost seemed like it's kind of counterintuitive, because you would think that you'd look at Secret Wars and think it was a Me Too.
Right.
And in a way, it might have been. It may have been a rush job to beat Kenner to market.
It looks like what happened was they said, okay, what do we got out right now? Because DC didn't even mess around with that. DC was just like, here's our flagship figures. You know, Series 1, the Justice League, and the Justice League's villains, and Robin, because, well, and let's go. Throw it out there.
Yeah.
But Secret Wars really did take the characters from the Jim Shooter horrifying Secret Wars series and put them into play.
Yeah, they did make specific choices of character based on that story.
Right, whereas DC was like, screw it. And then, you know, and then Secret Wars stopped. They had two series. The first series had Captain America, Spider-Man, Doom, Magneto, Iron Man, Wolverine, Kang, and Dr. Octopus. So some of the major players in the Secret Wars books. Keep in mind, these figures were not particularly articulated. They had, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 points of articulation, arms, legs, and head.
Yeah, and in many ways almost seemed to be the inspiration for the early 90s Star Wars figures, because they all had, you know, mile-wide chests.
Yeah, they did. But they were all kind of rubbery. Not necessarily hard plastic. Weird choices for, like, Magneto. They all had a similar gun. So they were all printed with the same gun. They all came with shields with lenticular holograms on them. I believe the heroes had round shields, and then the villains had square shields. But it was a very cookie cutter. Most body types the same. Repaint. The heads were different, but not necessarily the bodies. Type of situation. It does look like a rush job, a rush to market.
Yeah.
Whereas Secret Wars just went for it. Like, they really did it. The Batman was very Neil Adams Batman. Gray, the gray and blue with the yellow belt. Robin was really cool. I always liked Robin.
You know, and it's funny you mentioned the Neil Adams look, because one of the things that's fascinating about the Superpowers line is you do see some of the influence, because Robin had it had the flavor of George Perez.
Yes.
Teen Titans.
Yes.
Batman had the flavor of Neil Adams. Certainly the Gil Kane style and the Perez style, Brainiac and Luthor, respectively. You know, each of these things had this wonderful little flourish that put you in the mind of some of the signature creators.
They were comic. Here's the thing. They were comic accurate. The Batman and Robin, I believe Superman as well, had clip-on capes. The capes clipped on to the neck.
Yeah.
Which was really cool. Robin had like a signature like Robin judo chop action. The Aquaman had the kicky feet. We talked about that last week. Green Lantern had the ring finger that would come up, the fist that would come up with the ring on it. Joker was one of the really cool figures that I very much liked, because Joker had the big giant mallet that, you know, his hand would start up and then come down, swinging the big giant mallet.
Yeah, and he had that wonderful mallet that was had the Joker face and the handle was a nose.
It was very cool. And then Series 2 was also really cool. Had Darkseid with what do we talk about? Light tubes in his head.
Oh, the light pipe.
Light pipe, yes. Light pipe, that's what it was. Of all things, the figure that I never thought I would ever see was the Dr. Fate figure, which was pretty amazing. But this whole line was like that. Kalbak? There was a Kalbak figure?
Yeah, toward the later part of the series, their first big error, in my opinion, was they got very Kirby-esque.
Yeah.
I would find out later that this was driven heavily by a cartoon based on the series.
Right.
And so someone made the editorial decision that we needed to have most of the villain base be the Kirby characters. You got Kalibak and Desaad, Mantis.
But there was a parademon in there. That's pretty cool.
There was a parademon and even a mail-away, initially a mail-away of Steppenwolf with his battle axe thing.
Right. Later, there was that weird, awful Orion figure, too.
Oh, that's so true. That was terrible.
Right.
Yeah, and it was a very hit and miss series, and it seemed like they were on the verge toward the end of getting it right again when all interest was lost.
Right.
I've seen images of Batgirl, Supergirl.
The unmade ones? Yes. Yeah, the unmade ones were pretty amazing. But this was also in the heyday of the mail-away, too, don't forget. So they had a mail-away Clark Kent repaint of Superman, which I never was able to get my hands on, but I would have absolutely loved to have gotten my hands on. It was just so rad. But yeah, so I think that's where it started. It started with those two lines, and then all bets were off. Because then we started venturing into the world of X-Men figures.
Yes, indeed. And I think in many ways, the Kenner series did pave the way. Like with the Lex Luthor, I remember one time there was a Superman comic Steve had let me borrow, or maybe it was some point in Crisis. There was a shot of Luthor flying along in his armor, like flying away from you. And in that shot, there were this series of like little jets or like little exhaust ports, you know, in the back of the overshell.
Yeah.
That were like, you know, propulsion jets. And I got curious, I went and grabbed the figure. I'd never noticed those were sculpted in there.
Nice.
They paid that level of attention. And then the other one that I just really loved, I thought was a lot of fun, was the Plastic Man, where you squeeze his arms together and his neck popped up.
That was really cool. Like, and that's the thing. Like, they were having fun. This is definitely an entry into their later figures. I would really like to do enough research to figure out how, you know, how this played into, like, the DC Direct line. And if it did, because they had a lot of fun with this line, I think. Because the Cyborg was a super cool figure.
Except you never saw him.
You never saw him, but he was still super cool. You know, he had the removable hands, and I think he even had a light tube in his head, and removable hands. Like, that's value added right there. But after that, we started to see all kinds of stuff coming down. Almost too much to talk about, because we had starting with the X-Men figures, which we will get into more in the last episode, I'm sure. But everything that ranged from really good to just bad. Just awful.
Oh, yeah. The early X-Men figures came to us, interestingly enough, via Toy Biz, who were also, you know, we spoke before about the unprecedented nature of Mego. Apparently we were wrong, because I didn't think about the fact that there was a period there where Toy Biz was producing awful rehashes of superpowers.
Oh, really?
They looked the same, had the same features, but they were very crudely made. They were almost like knockoff figures.
Okay.
Yeah, you can look up and see the Toy Biz. In fact, I should probably do for the flavor art a side-by-side comparison. Toy Biz had the Penguin and Joker, I think. I know they did the Flash.
Oh, I remember those. Yeah.
And they later did a Flash with like their Flash didn't have kicking legs. And so they made a little pullback.
Oh my God! Thing. Yes, the super power. What were they? But they also made the Batman figures for the movie, which is their only redemption right
yeah.
now.
Yeah. And in fact, what's interesting with the Batman early, this is the Tim Burton Batman.
Yes.
There were at least three distinct heads that were running changes during the production of those figures.
Right.
There was the one known as the Keaton, because it had a very rounded chin protruding from
the... The Keaton!
Yes, you had the Keaton, you had a square jaw, and then I cannot recall, there was, if I'm not mistaken, there were three in all. And it was, yeah, it's kind of fascinating that changed so much. What the initial line was Batman, the Joker, and Bob the Goon.
Yes, yes it was.
So you know you have an exciting toy line.
Hey, Bob the Goon, I will tell you this with absolute 100% assurity, that Bob the Goon was one of my favorite action figures as a kid, and I still have it with that damn Batcave. I still have it.
Oh, yes, indeed. They did do that Batcave.
The damn
with
Batcave.
With a vat of chemicals.
With vats of chemicals. But there were some figures in this line I actually liked. I mean, it was kind of crappy. There was some crappy crap in this. I'm not going to lie. But there were some figures in this I really enjoyed. I did not enjoy the Green Lantern figure in this as much as I enjoyed the Green Lantern figure from the actual Superpowers line. Because the Green Lantern figure in this had a squirty squirt ring.
Oh, I'd forgotten about that one.
Which I think they just lost the ability to... their synapses were just refused to fire at that point. Like, let's let his ring squirt. That's what I got. Like, no, stop it. But I do like the Luther in the purple double-breasted suit.
Yes.
Which was a part of this line for sure. That was awful. That was the worst. But yeah, no, you're absolutely... I completely forgot about this line until you brought it up, that there was another line of what was essentially DC Superpowers figures that were almost direct ripoffs.
Yeah, and then soon after, they pretty much abandoned DC in favor of Marvel. And I think largely, Avi Arad, who we talked about
yep.
in reference in the past to Marvel, who helped eventually establish what would become Marvel Studios, he was very actively involved with the toy lines.
Right. He was Marvel's kind of toy czar for a while before he went into the movie side of things. But he was definitely their toy czar, and he made the deals. He made the Toy Biz deal. He then later pulled the Toy Biz deal. I think that was his last move as the toy czar. Which was to get out of that, but
the interesting thing is that Toy Biz started out making some really crappy figures.
They did,
you can see as they go through the lines from the earliest Marvel and DC stuff. For example, Thor with no cape.
Right.
I remember finding a loose Superpowers Superman.
Yeah.
That I could put the cape on backwards on Thor because I hated the fact that my Thor figure had no cape. It's so patently ridiculous.
So angry. You're just so angry.
Oh, I am. To this day, I cannot forgive Toy Biz for that tragedy. And one of the other, it was really X-Men that took off, and I think it was on the strength of
Wolverine. It was on the strength of Wolverine, let's be honest.
Not so much that. It was the cartoon.
Yeah. Australian Wolverine. And
yeah, the later Wolverine where they finally decided that the Canadian accent didn't necessarily have to sound like anything.
Right. It could just be a guy. Right.
Yeah. So, so you had that whole, not really revival of... interest, but that new groundswell of interest in the X-Men because of the cartoon. So they really started focusing so heavily on X-Men that in a way, that undermined the line.
Well, and they made some really interesting choices. And two of Cole's favorite action figures came out of the first initial 1991 X-Men Toy Biz series of toys, which was I Do Wolverine, Fruit Salad Nightcrawler.
Yes.
Yeah, I Do Wolverine that comes with his own ring.
And his mask was a ring.
His mask was a ring, which we did give away one of those on...
On the live show.
On Hey Kids Live. And we've talked at length about Fruit Salad Nightcrawler.
Actually, courtesy of the, and that Wolverine came to us courtesy from the folks at Dallas Vintage Toys.
Yeah, and Fruit Salad Nightcrawler with the suction cup hands, that if you turn them over, it looks like he's holding a nice punch bowl.
Well, it looks like he's holding a nice little, bowl on his hand and then balancing the other on his knee.
Right. So they made some interesting choices. They hit their stride around 92, 93 with the Gambit and Banshee. They kind of branched out a little bit more and gave us an actually pretty nice Sauron figure that we hadn't seen yet. And then all hell breaks loose.
Yes.
With all manner of crazy,
pretty much
insane
shit. And it was open season on anything. You were getting the Generation X figures. You were getting the Cable and the Shudder six pack.
And their chests get bigger. Just get exponentially bigger every single run. Just how?
Yeah,
why?
And early on, they were trying to be like the Superpowers line with gimmicks.
Right.
And then I think over time they began to realize that, maybe the gimmicks aren't really what people want.
Yeah. Maybe we just give them a good toy. Maybe we just give them an accurate toy. Though, I will say this, the fact that certain lines included members of the Star Jammers was good for me. I mean,
that's true. I actually, for years, had Chod.
Oh, you mean Chode?
Or Chode.
I think his name's actually Chod, but we're going to go with it. For purposes of this show, we'll go with Chode.
Chode. But I actually, on my desk of Time Wasting Distractions, I have from the Imperial Guard of Shi'ar, Warstar.
Nice.
Reside on my desk because they are Warstar. Warstar appeared in the death of Jean Grey. Beast went up against this John Byrne-esque robot that then apparently had a little bitty robot inside.
It's Mad Max robot with robot inside.
Yeah, it really was. It was Master Blaster, and it referred to itself in the plural.
Oh, did it?
So we are Warstar.
Oh, I remember that. Yes.
And unfortunately, Beast didn't have his wits about him and figured out there was more than... Like a Transformer, there was more than meets the eye.
More than meets the eye! Oh, my God. Yeah, I'm sure we'll talk more about the bad figures from this line. And we're not even going to go down the road of those... what were they? Eight-inch figures? Nine-inch figures?
Oh, yes. They're about, 8 or 9 inch, the Big Mothers, where a lot of them were just, they were just sort of sized up. Again, it was almost like knockoffs, because they were all sort of pantographed up from the existing things. But it allowed them to have things like big cloth capes or throwing cloth elements, and then they just went nuts.
They did. They lost their damn minds with those ninja lines.
We were talking about Batman over at Kenner. There was a Batman line that ran for years and years and years and years, and it was just sort of like, how many different Batmans can we make? It was like, I kid you not, you could literally build your own Batman Hall of Armors.
Oh, sure. Oh, is this the... the one that's kind of loosely based on the TV show, like the cartoon, but not, like, where you would have, like, Arctic Batman and lava Batman.
Laser Batman and Space Batman,
right?
Deep Sea Batman, and Raspberry Batman.
No, you're absolutely right. It was insane. Like, I remember those figures and just going, why? Like, looking at them in the store and then going, why? And then Kenner also, while we're talking about it, had what at one point was like the Elseworlds Batman line, which was like the Legends of Batman. Do you remember that?
Yes. Oh, that's right. Because that gave us the often much sought after Wild West Batman. The Blue, the Gray, and the Bat, even though they didn't present it as such.
Well, they also gave us they gave us, like, Night Batman, and they gave us Pirate Batman. They gave us the first really good, even though it was awful, Nightwing figure.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, the awful, like, in-between stage Nightwing, where he had, like, he had lost the giant lapels.
Yes.
But had strapped on, like, the weird,
Yeah, it had the yellow feather motif that went all the way across the shoulders.
Yeah, it was like a weird Incan dress of, like, just a bad scene. But yeah, so everybody was reaching at this point. Nobody had figured out that if you actually go to the comic books and create what was in the books and put them on the shelves, people were going to buy it.
Yeah.
Nobody had quite got that yet.
Yeah, I think that they were still, a lot of it was still this, toy companies had well into the 2000s, and it all depends on who you happen to be looking at, whose lines you happen to be looking at, but there was a drum being beaten for the longest of, you know, we're a toy company, toys are for kids, we're making these things for kids.
Right.
And even the worst ones would be, you know, we're still being very heavily collected.
Yeah. Yeah. That's our fault. We have to take blame for that. We can't put that on anybody but us, unfortunately. It was us and our kind that were still scavenging these
things.
Yes,
and the problem was that it took a long time for the toy companies to start to embrace the fact that a large part of their sales were to adult collectors.
Right.
And little by little, the idea shifted. In some cases, it was a little too late. Toy Biz shrewdly, and I think because they had, you know, Marvel's Toy Czar, pull the string. they were able to, you know, get a leg up on what was going on in the industry with things like Marvel Legends.
Right.
Which, almost out of the gate, Marvel Legends got it right. They began to understand you could hit a higher price point. You could give a multiple points of articulation, not for play value, but for display value.
Right.
And that's where we start to see the dynamic change. And what's really ironic is that it's in fits and starts.
Yeah.
You know, as long as the hundreds and hundreds of figures that were made in the Star Wars line, Kenner / Hasbro still held fast to the idea that, you know, toys are for kids. Have you seen what this stuff does to kids?
Hey, you want to buy some Death Sticks? I saw somebody, this is off topic, but I saw somebody really reach for a Matrix Was it Phantom Menace? It was Phantom Menace that wanted to buy some Death Sticks, was it, right?
It was Attack of the Clones.
It was Attack of the Clones. I saw somebody really reach for a reference in that, where it was like, in The Matrix, they talk about the lady in red, how they created it as a distraction. And then in the actual canteen, you know, where the guy was selling the
Outlander Club.
Yeah, whatever it was. Wherever Fish Mooney was holding court that day. There was some lady in red in there, and they're like, look at it! Look, it's the... And I'm like, guys, come on. Shut up. Shut up. Doesn't work. Bad, but that's okay. I just wanted to say that. I didn't... It was a bad thing. So what scale are the figures like... Okay, so you can buy them... They have them a lot Marvel Select. The Marvel Select figures are pretty insane.
Yeah, the interesting thing there is you're also seeing the emergence of a direct market.
Yes. Yes.
And that was literally, and you know, not to skip too far ahead into next week, that was literally a product of the rise of the indie, which is, you know, the rise of the indies is our next topic. When you started seeing like little Antarctic Press,
yeah,
finding some, you know, at this point we were getting closer to where we are now, but we were still a good 15 or 20 years out. But production costs were going way down.
Right.
And that's what gave us things like McFarlane Toys was the biggest to jump on this. But like Little Antarctic Press down in San Antonio or Austin, wherever, I think they were in Austin.
Yeah.
Commissioned, as it were, runs of figures based on some of their characters. And we'll talk about that more at length, but I think that that's what inspired, again, you have Marvel and DC both recognizing that the direct market is buying a lot of toys at roughly, you know, because I was working for Diamond, and I can tell you, if you ever went to a toy store during the time that, like, the Toy Biz figures were coming out, or any of this stuff was coming out,
right,
and you went there and you thought, man, they sure want the sky for their toys. I mean, I can get the same thing for $7 over at Toys R Us. The thing about it is, their wholesale price was $7 a figure.
Right.
And that's why they were charging 12 or 15 a figure at retail in the comic shops, because they, Diamond or the other distributors that were around them, were buying these things by, you know, the pallet load.
Right.
Where the retail chains were buying them by the train car load.
Yeah.
It's not a very difficult leap to realize why you have that disparity in price. But it's not widely publicized, and most people don't have enough foreknowledge about the way those things work to put the two and two together. But all of that said, you know, you're seeing a period where there's a recognition that comic shops want to carry these toys. And...
Right.
Literally, it's bizarre to me that it took... There was an article I read that there was a mandate that came down in D.C. to begin work on a direct market-only D.C. toy line.
Right.
And their first mandate was to create a Lobo action figure.
That was their first mandate?
Yeah, that was what they wanted. It took 5 years for DC Direct to be born.
Wow.
Something like that. For some ungodly amount of time. I was the only person in the world who remembered that there was this mandate that had come down. And they didn't make a Lobo action figure as their first thing. But DC Direct did start to bring us. And initially you would get literally every 2 months, they would have a soft release. You would have like 3 figures come out. And then 2 months later, 3 more would come out within a theme. So, like, you got Green Lantern and Green Arrow.
Right. Oh, those
and
were good
it.
Days.
Green Lantern and Green Arrow. You're done. There is nothing else in this line. But what they allowed to have happen is, unlike traditional toys, which are case-packed according to some strange ritual algorithm that makes no damn sense at all, the DC Direct allowed the comic shop retailer to buy 4 Green Lanterns and 3 Green Arrows.
Right.
Or one of each on spec. Early on, they were offered at, back in the day, they were offered as either, if you bought them as a case, you paid less per figure. But you had the option to pay, I think it was like maybe, say, at wholesale, $10 a figure, and maybe $90 for a case of 10.
Right.
So, you know, there was some incentive, or $80 for a case of 10, or something like that. So the retailer had some incentive to buy a case within the assortment once they started doing assortments. It took years for them to produce a dozen or so Legion of Superheroes characters.
Well, what was really cool about it...
Because there were three at a time. I mean,
was that when they started, when DC Direct production started, right, it wasn't until 2 or 3 years after they started that they started releasing what we would consider mass-market action hero figures. Because what they started with, since they were going direct to market, were the things that they thought would the comic shop owners would want. So what we saw was we did see a couple things like Wonder Woman and Plastic Man, but really we saw some really interesting choices because we saw things like Wesley Dodd Sandman. We saw Swamp Thing. We saw Death and Jesse Custer. We saw Morpheus and Jack Knight, a perennial Hey Kids Comics favorite, and Spider Jerusalem. Before we ever saw a Superman. Before
that
we ever
so
saw
true.
A Batman. Because you could go to Toys R Us or KB Toy or Gold Circle or Target or whoever you had and buy those figures. You weren't going there at that point. You know, you've got to understand that the days that you can go in now and pick up Game of Thrones figures at Toys R Us, those are recent. Those days are recent. Used to be, you would get Mattel, and you would get Toy Biz, and you would get Kenner, and that's it. That's what you got. You got what you got. But you needed a place where, if you were really into Neil Gaiman, that you could go get a Morpheus toy, or you could go get a
Death
toy.
Oh yes, in fact, there were several versions of Morpheus from Sandman, including a deluxe one that had this massive cape thing, and it was all to reproduce or recreate the Barry Windsor Smith art. And we actually had one of those back in the days. We had the shop. We wound up with one from a collection we bought, and it was a thing of beauty.
Right.
And, you know, they were doing things like the Legion of Superheroes.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of hard to market to Toys R Us a superhero who dresses, a male superhero who dresses in pink.
Right.
But, you know, people who knew the Legion of Superheroes were eating that up. They were very rudimentary figures early on. There was a set that, you know, I had to reconcile my love of Aquaman with the fact that they were very poorly realized. An Aquaman and Aqualad box set.
Yeah.
But they were doing some interesting things late into the game. They started doing things like these big box sets based on the Super Friends cartoon.
Yes, yes.
And each of them came with two figures, usually rival characters, like, you know, Superman and Lex Luthor, or Batman and Joker, I believe.
I think so. I think you're right.
Robin
yeah.
came with Scarecrow, if I remember correctly. And Wonder Woman with Cheetah.
Yes.
And the neat thing is that they came with little miniatures that were associated, like a little Batmobile.
Oh, that's cool.
or a Hall of Justice, or a Legion of Doom headquarters, or Wonder Woman's invisible jet, or a bat jet, things like that. It was just really amazing, cool little thing. That was just little the pack in with the
value added to the whole kit and caboodle.
Yeah,
but they got. I mean, they went by the time because DC Direct ended and just went to DC Toys, essentially. DC Universe Toys got folded in. But by the end, man, they were on fire. Like, by and this was last year, because I remember talking about this on the show, that DC Direct wasn't going to be DC Direct anymore, and they were going to be, they were going to get folded into just DC Universe Toys. But they were churning out some pretty awesome stuff there at the end once they finally got it down. It took about 10 years, and they were releasing toys steadily for 10 years. And if you wanted those toys, you were, for the most part, going to comic shops or the aftermarket to get them, aftermarket toy stores to get them. And I had a pretty expansive collection of DC Direct toys, and I still have a bunch of Green Lantern ones. But and Cole, for God, I don't know how many you have. Do we even want to venture a guess as to, like, your Teen Titans alone? I think you probably have 12 or 13.
Yes, easily. I have pretty much every member of the Teen Titans they made back in the day, including over the years, different lines would actually add to that collection. Mm-hmm. They had a committed Teen Titans line, but the... I think the Kid Flash came from a line that was based solely on Flash characters.
Mm-hmm.
The Nightwing was from their first appearances line many years later. So, because I insisted on having the Nightwing with the high collar.
Well, you've got it.
And the silly little Boston brand reject. The Wonder Girl, I believe, came from... I had to wait a long time. Wonder Girl came from the Crisis, I believe.
Series. Okay.
Or Identity Crisis, or one of those type of things.
Right.
Jericho, I was thrilled. The only characters I don't have is they eventually did Beast Boy, but it's just a god-awful figure. It was just a repaint of something else. And they eventually... And, they, of course, the Aqualad from that box set. I just I've got Terra, Raven, Cyborg, Starfire, and even the Deathstroke from the contemporary Teen Titans line. With Superboy and others.
The other cool thing that they did, and we were talking about this earlier this show, was they figured it out. And they figured out that if you took what you had, you were given the freedom, and you didn't have to sit, and I'm sure there was a room, I'm sure that there was a table, and I'm sure there were people sitting around the table making decisions, but the people that were making decisions weren't Mattel. They weren't Toy Biz. And you can say, hey, you know how 5 years ago we did, the whole story where Bane breaks Batman's back. Yeah, you remember that from DC? Yeah, and the DC guy's like, yeah, we did that. Who are the key players in that? And they're like, Azrael, Batman, Bane. Then we had the crazy Jean-Paul Valley Batman, and Nightwing was involved. Why don't we make toys about that? And nobody was there to say, nobody wants toys about that. There aren't enough, rocket launchers and light armor to strap onto those figures. And they did it. And they sold the shit out of them. And they did it over and over. Crisis on Infinite Earths. Kingdom
yes, when they
Come.
Started theming them, that was what was really amazing. Then you could literally own your favorite story arcs.
Right. And you could have a Batman from, a Batman from Nightfall and a Batman from what was Justice. And you could have a Batman from, you have armored Batman from Kingdom Come, and you could have every Batman ever, Batman from Long Halloween, you could have Greg Caputo Batman, you could have all the different artists.
Yeah, there was a whole, the Batman, the Long Halloween, you mentioned, there's the Tim Sale Catwoman.
Yeah.
That's dead on. And yeah, a lot of times they were in the Joni Long Torso Supergirl from
Yeah. But you could do that, and they realized that people were going to buy those. People would buy a Timberwolf action figure from Legion of Superheroes if you made it. You know, people would buy, and you don't have to make. And that's the other thing is, if you're DC Direct, you don't have to make a tanker. You know, an ocean lining tanker's worth of Timberwolf action figures. You can make to market. You can make to market. And once they realize that small press, make to market, ship direct to comic shops and toy stores was working, that changed the industry forever. Absolutely changed.
And so you have this period where DC Direct comes along, Marvel Select, as it was known.
Which are some fantastic figures, by the way, the Marvel Select.
Well, and the fascinating thing with Marvel Select is there was a mandate from the beginning to maintain a consistency that has lasted for over a decade in their packaging. You can buy, and I saw a picture recently of the Lost Toys when they were having one of their swap meets. I was invited to sell that. And this guy was showing some pictures on his phone of his Marvel selection, and it occurred to me they've never changed the packaging.
Nope.
In all of these years, and you can consistently count on, if you're one of these people who, you know, boxes them up and stores them, if you find a box that's going to hold, or, you know, God forbid you get like the original shipper cases, you can get however many different characters and cram them all in the same box, and they will consistently fit year after year after year, no matter how long you're collecting these things. And if, you know, depending on how you display them, the neat thing was the packaging allowed retailers to display them side out.
Right.
Because there was an exciting graphic on the side that sold the character.
Right.
And you could put them in like on a, like a bookshelf.
And one thing, and DC Direct did not do this. They did a pretty good job of it, but they didn't do it great, because I can tell you, because I've collected them and so have you. But Marvel Select did. Their scale is consistent. If you buy a Hulk figure, it is a Hulk-sized figure. If you buy a Wolverine, it is to scale to Hulk. Like, they did a fantastic job with scale.
Yeah,
like,
your Hulks and Abominations and Hulkbusters and...
Yeah.
Any of your Colossi are all hefty figures.
Yeah, it's so good. They just did a really good job. And I think that goes fairly unnoticed because they aren't as readily available. They're also very expensive in the aftermarket if you've missed them in the aftermarket, because they're kind of aftermarket by the time they hit, unless you go to a Disney store and buy them, which you can still do at like $25 to $30. But once...
And you also, we'll talk about this in a minute, the Disney store does bring up an interesting point about both Marvel and DC's direct lines.
Go ahead. Let's just jump in, because we're running a little low on time. Let's go.
Well, you know, the idea behind both of these lines was these were direct to comic shop retailers via their distributors, which would ultimately become solely... as inadvertently happened, solely Diamond Comic distributors.
Right.
But little by little, you know, it became obvious that both Marvel and DC spoke the international language. Do-re-mi. And they started to have, like, oh, well, here's these things that were supposed to be just for you, the comic retailer, but we're kind of selling them to Toys R Us too.
Yeah, a little bit. We're gonna sell them a little bit to Toys R Us, but we're not gonna. But the one thing they didn't do, I don't think, and I have some inside information into this, is they didn't sell them at the volume at which a Toys R Us would normally buy
that
toys. You know, that they still had to get, if you go to Toys R Us and you saw a DC Direct action figure, they had to buy them at the same cost and the same, you know, the same quantity levels as your mom and pop. They had the same options. Now, they could order a shit ton more, but they had the same options. So you weren't given special, I don't think they were given special dispensation because they were a big box retailer. I could be wrong because money talks, but.
Yeah, that's true. But also with Disney, because of their association with Marvel.
Well.
I'm not sure if this occurred before, but certainly after you you began to you see that they start getting their own store exclusives.
Yes.
So, you know, your hardcore collector, they're still finding that consistent packaging and all that, but they're never going to find these, except in an aftermarket kind of way, at their local comic shop.
Right. Right. But you know what? Warner Brothers, do you remember Warner Brothers stores?
Oh, I remember Warner stores, yes.
Yes, they had the same thing going on long before the Disney stores made their deal with Marvel. You could go in and get exclusive DC Direct Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman action figures at the Warner Brothers stores before any of that, before Marvel made their deal. So, you know, everybody's a little guilty of putting their hand in that pocket and making that exclusive money, I think.
That's so true. And then on the subject of exclusives, then you also expand further with the one thing that I think collectors love to hate and hate to love, but it's the exclusivity that's set in with San Diego Comic-Con.
God damn it. Yes. So,
DC Direct was terrible about this because they would give you these wonderful things. Or not DC Direct, I should say. It was when Mattel got the DC license.
Mm-hmm.
Mattel would give you things that they would make available, but if you went to San Diego, they'd be available and better.
Yeah, they'd be super special available.
Yeah.
Like, what was the Swamp Thing figure?
Yes, the Swamp Thing. We're very fortunate to be able to get a hold of the San Diego Swamp Thing. Their Swamp Thing in that line was really incredibly cool because it was a regular action figure, but it is completely sheathed in rubber. So it has all of the articulation of the rest of their line, except you can't see the articulation points.
Right.
Because it's completely covered in a rubber suit.
Which is awesome.
Probably means, you know, a few decades from now, that's all going to start rotting.
Right, you're going to get the rubber rot set in.
Yeah, but for now, I can really enjoy it. But if you went to San Diego, you got a pair of Anton Arcane's Unmen.
Yep.
These wonderful rights and creature designs. My absolute favorite of the Unmen being that sort of head-brain-hand creature.
Yes.
You know, to actually have that produced in a toy form is rather amazing. And but, you know, yeah, granted, they made the figure available on their website, but you had to go to San Diego for that. The same with the Wonder Twins. If you went to San Diego, you got a little unboxed Gleek with an eagle.
Right.
And a bucket of what looked like a rippling purple water with a face in it.
Which was rad. That's awesome.
Incredibly brilliant stuff, but it was just this also profound sense of denying collectors. With the plat was another really cool, because he had all these different plug-in accessories that made him more interesting. But if you went to San Diego, you also got a suitcase
in plastic.
Red with the motif Plastic Man as a suitcase. And inside the suitcase were little miniature comics.
Yeah.
Plastic Man.
Yeah, and it's extreme exclusivity, and I think it drives us a little crazy.
And you've probably heard Annie and I talk about how we were gushing that Percala got us the Marvel set.
Yes, yes.
From a half,
which brings
3¾-inch line with Tiger Shark and radioactive man. And at the time, the only place you could get Baron Zemo, and he, of those three, is the only one to ever get re-released as a card figure.
Right. And so that brings us to another point that we are not going to have time to get into, unfortunately, but if you ever want to hear Cole and I discuss 3¾-inch Marvel figures, there are about 12 issues of Hey Kids Comics in which we go on at length. And we will again. That's the thing. There's so many to talk about. I don't know why they haven't done a 3¾-inch of the Daredevil from the TV show. That would be awesome.
Yes, I'm surprised nobody's jumped on that.
They could give us a whole run of those, because they usually only release, what, 5 per series? Yeah. They could give us a Kingpin, a Daredevil, a Night Nurse, a Matt Murdock.
I would just love to have the D'Onofrio.
Yeah, a Foggy Nelson,
I think, you know, if you gave me a Kingpin with a miniature canvas.
Just white.
Yeah, I would just display it, the only hero would just not face out. To me, that would be the most brilliant
story. Just facing it?
Just facing the canvas, yeah.
Just facing the canvas, yeah. I mean, there's so many, there's so
just
much.
Just because I would display it, you know, in a place where it's kind of almost by itself.
Yeah.
And just so people who know would get such a kick out of it.
An innocuous, just kind of in a corner, like just by itself. That would be awesome. That would be super awesome. But yeah, there's the 3¾ line has done so much for Marvel toy collectors, because the figures are very, very ornate. They're very well sculpted. They often come with very cool accessories and value-added pieces. And they put out figures that we never in a million years would have thought we were going to get. And you know, bless them for that, and I hope they keep it going. We've seen sort of a loose, what we could consider a drought for a while on those, but I think they're coming back. But yeah, there's so many that they could make, and especially now that everything's changed in the Marvel Universe again, there are a ton of them they could make. So, and I still want Cable with Baby, Old Man Logan. If the figures that I've wanted forever are still the figure, Nick Fury from the Nick Fury Files. There's still a ton of them out there that, you know, and I've been collecting those. Cole and I both, we kind of have gone off the deep end with those figures. But we were having a race at one point, and I don't even know how many collectively or separately we have at this point.
Hundreds. Probably easily about a couple hundred by now. Getting close to it.
Right, and I pared
and
down.
On the way.
And I pared down, and I still have, I think, over 100. But yeah, this just it's disgusting, and I think by far, you know, that has been my favorite toy line of all time, next to Star Wars. That has been my favorite toy line of all time. What about you, Cole? Let's end it on that. What's your favorite
Absolutely.
Toy line?
As far as the comic book toy lines, I'd have to say it's a mix. It's difficult to pin one down. The for consistency, for capturing the look and feel, and just being a joy to have in the collection, because I do have all of them, is the Kingdom Come line from DC Direct.
So good.
Because the sculptors captured the look almost across the board. All but one of the Kingdom Come figures just look like they've walked off the page. I love the Alex Ross Justice, mind you.
Oh, it was good.
But the problem is there were so many interpretations of characters in Justice that I don't like.
Yeah.
So they don't become part of the collection. But with Kingdom Come, I loved it all. Because they did things like Blue Beetle in that amazing armor.
Yes.
You know, Aquaman and his cumbersome undersea armor and cloaks.
Yes. Green Lantern.
Knight's Templar look. Yeah, the Green Lantern with his giant knight thing.
Yeah.
Including his mega big-ass sword.
Right, the sentinel of the universe, essentially. Like, you know, like, it's so good. The older Superman. that they captured so well. It just,
and the like incredibly sexy cougar Wonder Woman.
Yeah, right.
Loincloth going on, like the aging sex bot.
And then angry old Batman. Just
yes, and his angry Batman armor. And even like a Spectre who comes on a stand, so he looks like he's kind of hovering a bit, who was paired in a box set with Norman McKay.
Which is
nobody
insane.
Ever would have given us that. And the Deadman figure, it's a little bit creepy. It's so well
accurate,
done.
Accurate, yeah.
And what's nice is, and the Linda Hamilton looking Jade.
Damn it. I need to go back and read Kingdom Come, man. I need to.
Dog and everybody. And what's really cool is there was a later JSA line, the modern JSA. The Starboy from that line slots perfectly into the Kingdom Come.
Right.
Because it's the Kingdom Come Starboy.
Right.
And then you also had. The only complaint I have is the Red Arrow figure. Because it was a wizard mail away.
Was it?
And it was just a repainting of the Green Lantern from that Green Lantern Green Arrow, which was one of the earliest DC Directs. The only difference is they actually changed the G-shaped belt to an R.
That was it.
Otherwise, it is exactly the same figure with a red beard instead of a. You know, auburny beard instead of a blonde beard, and all of the accoutrements in red instead of greens.
Boo. Oh, all right. We got to wrap this up, man. We haven't done this nearly enough justice, but we kind of knew going in that we weren't going to because
or nearly enough justice lead.
Yeah, because there's just no way.
There are far too many lines. You have, you know, from the earliest Mego lines, which are the first point where you're getting. En masse,
yeah.
These characters to your superpowers and Secret Wars to your various targeted lines based on X-Men or based on Batman.
Avengers.
And part of the reason you didn't get Batman early on is because of Ironclad licensing.
Yep.
That stymied DC at every turn to the point where you see merchandise. The Death for Man Batman could not be a pallbearer on the t-shirts.
Really?
Because t-shirt licensing that was written in the language of an era that didn't anticipate direct market.
Wow. Products. I did not know that.
Self-producing. That is why he could not appear on anything, trading card pack-ins, anything they produced, because Topps had Ironclad licensing for Batman.
Wow.
Probably some apparel company or companies had Ironclad, and as far as the toy companies, Kenner had Batman. And until that license lapsed and they didn't renew it, and then it became DC. Eventually, DC Direct became Batman Direct.
Yes, it did.
And that's why you see a flood of Batman products
because they could finally do it.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay, that makes sense. That makes sense. All right, that's a good place to end this because what we enter into next week is the indies.
We are going to see the rise of the indies, and my, what a rise it was.
Absolutely. So why don't you plug us up? We'll get out of here because now I want to go back and read Kingdom Come again, so I got to free up some time.
Absolutely. Well, we were, of course, coming to you from the Jedi Call universe at JediCall.com. You can write to us at JCUmail@yahoo.com. Sorry, we'll start again. We're coming to you from the Jedi Call universe at JediCall.com. You can write to us at JCUmail@yahoo.com. I did that twice, didn't I?
It's okay.
Did I? We're coming to you from JediCall.com. You can write to us at JCUmail@yahoo.com. You can look for Twitters at the Jedi Cole U and Twitters for tweets on Twitter. And you
I like
can,
calling them Twitters. I'm good with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can find the archive for the live Hey Kids comics as well as the every other, actually now it's the first and third Sundays of every week. Of every month. The first and third Sundays of every week.
We are flabberblasted right now.
Indeed. So, but you can check out at deepelemonair.com. You can see the archive of Hey Kids Comics Live. Just go to the show toggle and scroll down until you get to that. 10 episodes in all. And you can also check out myself and Eddie Medina on the Rant Corpit Live, which is the first and third Sunday of every month, which is what I was trying to get at earlier. Over at Deep Elm on Air, we will now, we've been 11 a.m. to 12 p.m. We're soon going to be changing 12 p.m. to 1 p.m.
Ooh, prime slot. Look at you moving up.
Yeah, we're moving on up there. We're shaking everything up over at the One Eye Joe Studios, so be sure and check that out as well.
Nice. And yes, buy, collect, and enjoy all of your action figures, man. Seriously, it is much easier to feel like you're staying young when you're in a toy store alone looking for action figures and not making excuses for it. So go have fun, buy some action figures, enjoy yourself, get nostalgic. It's a great time. If you can find a secondhand or aftermarket toy store, I know there's plenty in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. They're spattered all over this great nation of ours. So if you could find any of those, feel free to go in there and just enjoy, relive your youth, because it's all there. Your youth lives there. Go find it, man, woman, children, aged, Methuselian, whoever you are, go buy it. And with that, I am going to say goodnight, Cole.
And good night to you, and good night to everybody. Thank you again for joining us. We're going to toy around with this a little longer.
That's a good way to leave it. I love a good pun!